When you ask people what edge compute is, you get a range of answers. Cloud compute and DevOps with devices and sensors, the semiconductors outside the data center, including connectivity, AI, and a security strategy. It's a stew of technologies that's powering our vehicles, our buildings, our factories, and more. It's also filled with fascinating people that are passionate about their tech, their story, and their world. I'm your host, Pete Bernard, and the Edge Celsior show makes sense of what edge compute is, who's doing it, and how it can transform your business and you. So let's get started. I'm going to start our recording session. Yeah. And these can be the outtakes.
All right. I'm not sure what that means, but thank you.
Outtakes, yeah. This is like the director's cut. All right, so you got your water.
Yep.
This is exciting. This is the first episode, potentially the first episode. I haven't really decided how I'm going to publish these in chronological order or whatever, but short of any other good ideas, I will do that.
Who does the editing, by the way, Pete?
Oh, I have a friend of mine named Pete who does that.
You have such a dry sense of humor. You really do.
It's not too bad. The only editing I really do is taking out some of the ums and the ahs and stuff like that. But
no, I get it.
Try to do one long take, kind of a Martin Scorsese approach. You know, one long shot.
Yeah.
But I would like to introduce you, Michael Cupps. Thank you for joining. But I think, you know, for folks that are not familiar with Michael Cupps, maybe you can give us a little bit of your a little bit of your backstory before we get into the meaty topics.
I'm happy to, and thank you for the forum or the platform. I'm not sure which is how you refer to it. The backstory is, I don't know, 18 years ago, roughly, there was a posit or a question that basically said, how do I know if certain features and functions are being leveraged or used on devices? And this was kind of the IBM, you know, PC division, and they got acquired by Lenovo. Right. And then there was this continuum of desire or curiosity around, well, do people use certain like instant boot functions, or do they use, you know, access to the web functions, or do they use blah, 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 whatever. And so when I came into these groups, mm-hmm. I had a team of, you know, both sales and engineers that asked the question of, do people care about these things? Mm. And that kind of started my journey of insight around features and functions that are utilized. Right. And that's how I came to Microsoft, because we developed an out-of-box experience at a startup that captured insights, usage, and utilization for devices.
I see. Cool. And you were how long were you at Lenovo?
4 years.
4 years. And then how long were you at Microsoft?
7 years.
7 years. Cool. And where did you grow up? Where did you go to school?
I love these questions. I really do, because we moved 8 times before I was 12.
Oh boy!
And now I'm not in the military.
I was going to say it sounds military family, but just moving around.
No, not in the military. It was back when my dad and my family, I have 5 siblings, took a job and you moved. And right. The last move that we did was we didn't unbox anything, and my mom just put lamps on the boxes.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah.
But I went to school down in L.A. I went to undergrad in L.A., and then I taught in the Central Valley, and then I moved to San Francisco.
I see. Cool, cool. Yeah, no, these days, I mean, that was it. You know, when there was a job, you moved. I actually had breakfast this morning or a coffee with someone who used to be on my team who's interviewing, I don't want to call her out, I won't say her name, but she was interviewing for a Bay Area job for a very major company.
Yep.
One of the fangs. And And I told her, I said, you know, if you get this job, you're going to need to move to the Bay Area. Yeah. Right. I mean, and she was like, I really don't want to do that. I'm like, no, I mean, that's, and she's only a few years out of school and she was hired during the pandemic, right, where it's just all remote. And I'm like, no, that's like that's the typical thing. Like you go to where the job is, especially I think early in career. And there's a lot of folks talking about that, but if you're early in career and you're hired into a job these days, I think it's super important to be there. But back in the day, yeah, you're right. People just, or you worked for a big corporation and they moved you around the country and you moved. And that's just the way it was.
Well, and so back to the, why did you move so much? It's my dad was in, as an executive working for a publisher, William Hearst, and he was in distribution. So, my path has been in distribution for, his was in magazines and in editor or in newspapers within the region, and you had a region, right. We went to that region. So we lived in Canada, we lived in Chicago, we lived in Wisconsin, we lived in California, and so on. Mm. And then my mom finally said, "We're done moving," and we settled. And that was, that was how we navigated the world of subscriptions. And I actually sold subscriptions to end users when I was in high school. So
magazine subscriptions.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Cool. I remember those. I remember magazines.
Yeah. Now it's all on your. On Those your tablet, cool. It's on your phone.
I still get the New Yorker. I have a subscription to the New Yorker, which I don't know. I feel like I'm the last one that has that thing, but it's ridiculously expensive. It shows up like every week.
It is. Yeah, I get it. Anyway, so that was kind of the journey too. And then when I was at UCLA, I went through the process and IBM hired me into a sales role, but I didn't want to go into sales. So I went into engineering. System engineering, but I wasn't I wasn't electrical or mechanical, but I was technical. So that's how I got to IBM and then navigated my way through the process from there.
So. Right. Makes sense. And, you know, so I met you, full disclosure, we worked together at Microsoft. And when I met you, you were driving a lot of the IoT sales in the Americas and a lot of the kind of solution selling. And one of the big things that I talk about with Edge Celsior and with clients is that this is the edge ecosystem and the kind of stuff you were talking about, like telemetry and measuring things and figuring out, you know, what's actually happening out there. Any of these solutions, it's really a team sport. You know, there's always so many different partners involved. And so when you're going in to sell, I mean, I'm curious what your definition of sell is, but selling is not just selling your thing. It's really trying to help the customer solve the problem. And, you know, your whatever company you're coming from, that's just kind of part of the solution. It obviously needs to work with lots of other parts and no one company can go in and just solve the problem by themselves. But I'm curious, like when you put on your sales hat at Microsoft, like and selling, what did selling mean to you in the context of Edge?
I like the way you phrase that, because the world I came from, I was at a startup for 8 years. I guess you could say it's really a startup if it's 8 years. but it got me going on the journey to solving problems and providing a solution. And so I would I'd reposition the engagement from what are you selling to what are you solving? And Microsoft, IBM, Lenovo, they have products that they sell and they sell value, they sell productivity, they sell innovation but what problem is that solving? And the IoT pivot and the edge to cloud pivot was really around solving a fundamental challenge or fundamental issue. And I'll use an example if that's okay.
Sure.
Around a recent announcement that was made less than a month ago. And it's called Remix, R-E-M-I-X. And it's the Heinz dispenser. And Heinz, ketchup, mustard, the by the way, the you know, 57, Heinz 57, that number meant nothing. It wasn't like there were 57 ingredients in it.
Right.
But what Heinz and the team came to Microsoft over a year ago and said, we need to innovate around providing combinations of condiments that solves one problem. Hmm. And that one problem is we put packets into bags. You ever go through drive-through and
they're putting ridiculous
five ketchups, 10 ketchups, 20 ketchups,
right?
Relish, mustard, blah, blah, blah. And they said, well, in restaurant experiences, we want to create combinations that go beyond three. And they wanted to create 200 combinations. So this dispenser, and you can go online and you can type it in. They announced it at NRA, the National Restaurant Association. And they said, we're creating a customer experience that's going to create or deliver a unique
custom condiment combinations.
Well, customizable. Condiments that is for whatever you've ordered. And they announced it, and the process, back to your question on the ecosystem, but the process started with, we want to eliminate two things. We want to eliminate the waste associated with, you know, ketchup packages that are thrown away. And we want to eliminate the fact that there's only three choices.
Right. Right.
So, but again, it's in-store or in-restaurant experience. So they announced this dispensary, and it took 15 companies that came together to design and innovate for that dispensary, because the viscosity of ketchup and the viscosity of mustard and the viscosity of relish are very different.
Yeah.
And then when you mix in jalapeno and you mix in spices and all of that stuff.
Huh.
But the inspiration, so back to the why people care about those edge experiences and devices, was Coke Freestyle.
Right, and I remember that. Yeah.
You know, Coke Freestyle came out 15 years ago.
Wow.
And
hard to believe.
And other companies that, you know, have that are in the beverage industry have are working to innovate around differentiation that customizes exactly what you want.
Right.
So,
right.
So
listeners that don't know what Coke Freestyle is, it's a machine that you walk up to and you can sort of custom mix your own soda, right? So you can get the Diet Coke with lime and peach or whatever. I don't know. And it's all touchscreen based. I think actually it runs Windows IoT. That's what I heard. But,
And while you have SodaStream with Pepsi.
SodaStream with Pepsi. So everyone's trying to do this customized. So Heinz brought it to the condiment world. Do you know what the original Heinz innovation was way back when they first got started?
No.
The original innovation was they put their product in a clear glass bottle. Because back then in the early 20th century, food was pretty gross. It was pretty rancid and pretty gross looking. And so people put all their product in like brown bottles and dark green bottles so you couldn't see it. And Heinz was so confident in the freshness, he wanted to communicate the freshness of his product. And so he said, I'm going to put it in a clear glass bottle so you could see it. And people were blown away with this. They're like, wow, I can see this. And it actually looks edible. And
I did not know that.
Because back then, the ketchup, he was the first tomato-based ketchup. The previous ketchups before that were made of other stuff. And basically it had that condiment at the time because the meat tasted so bad. You had to slather it with something to cover up the kind of rotten meat taste. So anyway, probably too much about ketchup. I know too much about ketchup. So when you brought it up, I just had to go there.
So the example of the dispenser, the customizable dispenser called Remix, was I want to bring 200 options together.
Yeah.
Because that's number one. That was the, you know, customer experience. But number two was I want to minimize or eliminate waste because you've got all those plastic packets
that
gets thrown away.
Sure. So, well, I can imagine cost too. I mean, the operational cost of manufacturing those packets and shipping those packets versus, you know, bulk condiments. things like that. But I mean, to your point, this is like any of these problems need to be solved by multiple companies coming together. The stuff needs to work together. It needs to be integrated. There's schedules that need to be aligned. The architectures need to be open so that people can integrate and manage it. And it's all those details. And so that's why I think the Edge ecosystem and what you were doing at Microsoft, selling that that's fascinating to me. And I think that companies that are in this space, they all have a role to play. They all have cool stuff. But if it doesn't kind of come together in a solution, then it's kind of like a tree falling in the forest, right? If a piece of tech, edge tech, that isn't part of a solution, does it even really exist? You know, it's just sort of a neat thing. So
can I do one more example? Or
go
do you
for
wanna...
it. I don't know if you're going to top that one, though.
Oh, you like that one? I like that one, too.
Who doesn't like ketchup?
Except mustard people. Who doesn't like condiment experiences? So the next one I'll use is is a fuel pump, a basic, mm-hmm. you know, going into a gas station. And there is a company called Dover Fueling Systems, and mm-hmm. the product is called Anthem, A-N-T-H-E-M. And it is the edge innovation that was originally designed, and this has been in market a couple of years now, but it's been designed to solve one problem. And that problem was when you pull up into, I don't know, 4 pumps, 8 pumps, whatever the number of pumps is, and that mm-hmm. pump isn't working. Hmm. And you go, hey, wait a minute, I put in my credit card. Maybe it's the card reader. Maybe it's the, you know, dispenser, whatever. It's not working. So what do you do? So there are three options. Number one, find another pump.
Right.
Number two, go to another gas station. Hmm. Number three was go into the convenience store. And this is primarily for convenience stores, and say, that pump's not working.
Right.
Do you know what percentage of failed pumps were identified by the individual who took option three and said that pump's not working? 80%. And wow. Do you know what the time to fix was on that failed pump? Mm-hmm. It was at least 10 days.
Jeez.
So now multiply the revenue lost on a failed pump. And you know how the little yellow bag that sits on the, the handle?
Yeah.
So Dover came to Microsoft and said, we've got to figure out a way to be predictive and be able to identify that this is going to fail. Of those pumps that failed, over half were because of card readers, because of scamming, because of jamming, blah, blah.
Less
because of the automatics and the mechanics associated with getting fuel into the car.
Hmm.
The second problem that they wanted to solve, and we did a whole whiteboard session on this, was, well, if you're fueling, what's the average dwell time of fueling? Do you know? Well, it depends on the car, obviously. It depends on the car.
Yeah, I don't know, 5-6 minutes.
It's actually 4.5, but you're damn close. It's 4.5 minutes of dwell time, regardless of whether you've got a big, you know, SUV or you've got a little tiny, you know, fuel efficient car. So what they then did is they created a user experience that mm-hmm. created upsell for the convenience store.
Oh yeah, I've seen those little video thing or something.
Well, it's a big media. It's like 24-inch, and it's a huge media. And they basically then they added a third element, which was to create an experience around smell. So a smell of coffee in the morning, the smell of hot dogs in the afternoon.
Wow.
And so it became an ambient experience.
So it was like the churro smell would be wafting out. And you'd be like, half-price churros. Churro
and that's,
smell.
And then they had, you know, weather maps and all that other stuff.
Good
so,
Lord. That's
and I've got 20 more examples like that. But the point being is you can't do any of this and you can't connect in a way unless you have a platform that enables you to have that closed loop around, you know, telemetry, use, utilization, experience, feedback, how many people clicked on this and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you take the, you know, basic search and you take all of the, you know, ad-based environments that we have today and you exponentially expand into every single interaction that you have with a kiosk, with a, you know, mm-hmm. ordering terminal, with whatever.
So. Yeah. Yeah, definitely it's moving that direction. By the way, did you know that those gas pumps, if you keep it, if you put the thing in your car and you drive away, it will snap off automatically. It has like a quick release in case you drive away. Yeah, because I did that. I drove away with the thing in my tank and it kind of did a quick release and I was dragging the hose behind me for like about 100 feet. Yeah. Yeah. So a little anecdote there. Just in case. It's designed for idiots like myself who
I did not know that.
All well, I otherwise, know I mean, it'd be a disaster, right? I mean, you can't just like have gas spilling everywhere as you drive off.
Well, it messes up your car and obviously up the fuel pump. So,
anyway, they designed it for folks like myself. But anyway, that's cool. Yeah, I think there's a lot of these examples where it all has to come together and it's way more complicated than most people think. And it all starts, like you said, with problems that need to be solved. Right. Some sort of business problem, pretty well identified. And you always work back from the customer. But is it okay if we switch gears a little bit on topics? So let's talk about layoffs. Let's talk about getting laid off, because that's another thing you and I have in common, other than working at Microsoft, is getting laid off from Microsoft. But you've actually gone through this like several Five times.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
And it's a transition.
Right.
It's a transition. Now, whether it's a transition based on my decision or it's a transition based on the company's decision, I've had the opportunity to experience five of them, and everyone has resulted in a better place. So just build your timeline, whatever that means in terms of, you know, when that happens, but. Also, every one of them was built on the experiences from the previous, you know, years, months, weeks, whatever, of how you drive value and how you drive impact. So,
right. Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, there's probably about 400,000 of us out there listening that have been impacted by tech layoffs over the past 6 months or so or less. And so I'm sure it hits home with a lot of folks that maybe it's happened to them for the first time. And I know people say, don't take, you know, you can't take it personally. It's just kind of your name's on a spreadsheet and it happens that way. But it's hard not to take it personally when someone tells you, I don't want you to work here anymore. So I live a block from Microsoft and I loved working at Microsoft. It's fantastic. I always tell people like, you know, they got their money's worth. I got my money's worth and it's all good. And I'm still a shareholder. I like to think of myself as a big shareholder from my perspective, probably small from their perspective. But so I'm all in on Microsoft, but it's hard not to take it personally when I drive past the campus. I'm like, you know, it's nice to be able to leave on your own terms. But when you're not leaving on your own terms, you're right. You have to sort of take a step back and think about, you know, what have you gained from that experience? And how do you, you know, transition, or I would even say transform, you know, into the next experience and have that kind of, it's almost like a leap of faith or perseverance necessary to, you know, go forward and move on to the next thing, because it's just a fact of life.
It is. You know, it's interesting on how you describe the tech layoffs. And I actually am thinking more around the, you know, tech innovation. And in order to resource and support innovation, companies need to move from being a product based or a transactional based to subscription based. That's kind of the model that, you know, the SaaSification or cloudification of companies has moved to. But the one we're in now is even more transformational, because it's moving to a whole different model of work.
Right. And
whether you call it AI or you call it large language models or you call it generative capabilities, doesn't matter. It is going to move those resources from where they were and what they were doing to another place. And every company is going through, and you said this earlier, digital transformations. But now they're accelerating through integrating how they want to leverage, you know, tools like ChatGPT or tools like Baird or tools that make them more productive in a shorter period of time. Mm-hmm. And I've been using them for six months now, but it doesn't change the way we work. It just changes the how and the output of the work. Right. That's really, so this is a restructuring, if you will, in the industry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's a restructuring from, I need people to go and you asked me about selling versus solving. And I really like that. I like that positioning, because you don't sell AI. You solve problems, and you solve them through tools and technologies and platforms that are going to accelerate value,
right?
And value creation.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. So, yeah, the what's going on here? I mean, this is not the typical sort of layoff sort of economic situation, right? Where it's kind of traditional margin crunch, you know, drop your costs. What's happening is, like you said, there's a move toward more usage-based business models for tech. There's also the pandemic, you know, has enabled like a lot of geo-flexibility in work and frankly, a lot more, I would call it deconstructed work. So people are able to, you know, do different jobs at different times and, you know, come and go. And there's a lot more fluidity in the workforce, geographically, as well as kind of the number of gigs and types of gigs that people are getting. And so maybe there's some combination of that kind of usage-based kind of, you know, models and this kind of pandemic accelerated, you know, transformation of work that's coming together, and it's impacting also how people are thinking of staffing and how they're thinking of, you know, their workforce. And I had someone, I don't know if it was today, someone said, when do things go back to normal? And, you know, it's not going back to, there is no more normal. Like we're just moving forward to this new thing. And people just need to wrap their heads around that. And there's no shortage of work to do. I mean, there's no shortage of work to do and problems to be solved. But it's a matter of shifting your mindset from, I'm building a product that I'm going to sell, as opposed to, I'm going to help, you know, solve. And that's kind of a shift that everyone sort of needs to sort of internalize a little bit.
Well, it's a patterns of innovation. And if you think about, you know, steam engines to gas powered, you know, those manufacturers that were manufacturing for steam powered, you know, engine or trains and automobiles had to rewire and rebuild factories for combustible. Right. That was a very different infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So I kind of break it into four pieces: patterns of innovation that, you know, the web basically changed, PCs basically changed, you know, how people produced output and the way in which they did it. And then back to your question on, you know, transformations and transitions, there's also a strategy, and the strategy for how to, you know, obviously it's skilling. There's a big piece of that, but it's also who are the companies that are looking for that kind of resource and that kind of talent that, you know, you can go back, you know, 150 years to those that came to the West to, you know, farm and build out the lands and create towns, villages, and cities that ultimately became where we all are today. But then you have connections that matter, and the connections that matter are the ones that are the most compelling, because, you know, you and I can have a discussion and it's like, well, go west, young man, or go do this, you know, young lady. But if those connections aren't going to help, you know, reinforce the work and the place, in, you know, that you're in. And then last one is referrals to opportunities. What does that look like? And what are you hearing? And what are you saying? And so I break it into those four pieces. And, you know, every transition has, you know, its own, obviously, characteristics and opportunities. But you know, people, you know, make those connections. And those referrals help move them along.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, and that's where, you know, having a, you know, I feel fortunate that I've developed a nice network over the years of people that I know and worked with. I talked to some of the folks who used to be on my team that maybe were much more earlier in career. They haven't yet developed those networks. And sometimes that's a struggle, right? To get those referrals and, until your network becomes more mature, but it's kind of just the way things are going to be working moving forward. I think things are going to be a lot more flexible, a lot more deconstructed, and a lot more networked. And that goes for the work and the way of working as well as the technology itself. And I think that's just kind of the way it is. But yeah, it's an interesting time to navigate all that. And I know that, you know, you've got a lot of experience there. I know you've also provided a lot of leadership and guidance, which is appreciated to folks at Microsoft that have been, you know, impacted as well. So hopefully people will take away some good lessons from that. And, you know, for me, it's like, you know, if I hadn't gotten laid off from Microsoft, I wouldn't be doing Edge Celsior. I wouldn't be talking to some of these amazing companies I'm talking to and doing some cool stuff. And, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to the next phase here, because I think it's going to be, you know, pretty exciting and pretty fluid. And I think these older ways that are, you know, kind of hard coded patterns that keep repeating over and over again are probably going to get broken up. And that's probably a good thing. So, but it is very disruptive, I have to say, quite disruptive, to go from a regular full-time gig to, you know, this kind of more deconstructed life. It takes a little getting used to, but I have a lot more time for tennis now, which is good. It's pretty disruptive to kind of go from this kind of set pattern of, you know, going to work and coming home and all this stuff to go to a new pattern, to be defined, you know, that's a little more deconstructed and a little more variable. And, but, you know, I think that's just kind of where things are heading. And I think that's a factor of, like I said, a bunch of these things around the pandemic and the way of working and even the way some of these business models and consumption models are happening for technology. So, but, you know, we'll see.
Well, I've got a few that are entering or in the workforce, and they're, mindset is, and I think that is what it really comes down to, is that what's your mindset? Because if your mindset is, I'm going to be here for the next, you know, X number of years, that's probably not realistic. And right. If your mindset is, I'm going to keep doing this, what I'm doing every day, that's probably not realistic.
Exactly.
But the mindset that they've coached me on is really around just how does what you know, your purpose, you know, what is that, what is the purpose of what you're doing and why, and is it going to be meaningful for you individually and personally, and is it going to be meaningful for society? And you know, so they're, you know, that generation, and they're, you know, 30 plus years younger than me, but they're much more purpose driven and much more focused on what's the overall impact. And, you know, and how can I be part of that? And do I feel valued as part of whatever that is?
Yeah. Well, there's this whole formula of, you know, intrinsic motivation. Daniel Pink wrote a big, good book called Drive, right? About intrinsic motivation. And part of it is, you know, there's autonomy, there's mastery, but there's also, you know, aligning yourself to some kind of vision or purpose that's bigger than yourself. And I think if you can get those combination of things done, and whatever your job is, whether it's, you know, kind of gig work or, you know, working with multiple companies or working at a single company, whatever, as long as you can kind of get those things lined up, you're in good shape. But I think we all need to, like you said, it's a mindset shift as opposed to going back to quote unquote normal. You can't see my air quotes, but I'm making it normal. Rethink normal. That's my catchphrase.
I agree.
Cool.
So how do you, let me just ask, you've asked me these questions, but how do you manage through your transition? You've got like many things going on.
Yes. So. I have lots of things going on. In fact, today I felt like I'm busier now than I was when I was working full time at Microsoft and running an organization. My typical day would be, there's a little bit of mentoring involved. Like I had coffee this morning with a colleague on some mentoring and practice interviewing. I'm working with a number of companies through Edgecelsior on some kind of strategy alignments and strategy efforts. So that's usually part of the day. This podcast is part of the day. Usually I'm doing some yard work and some tennis as well. and basically, you know, just kind of looking forward to the next thing. I think it is about perseverance, and it is about kind of getting comfortable with a new mindset and staying connected to people too. I think one of the things that I found was I really liked being back in the office. I liked that face-to-face engagement. I think one of the downsides of kind of consulting and stuff like that is that sometimes you're just working by yourself and you're part of a virtual team, but you're sort of a temporary, you're the outsider. And so I kind of look forward to getting back to more of that kind of face-to-face team environment. And so we'll see how that works. I'm actually setting up with one of my clients a workshop, like a day-long workshop, where we're going to work on some strategy stuff, and that'll be in person in the Bay Area. So that'll be good. But yeah, I think you have to find, like you said, find what you're all about and what kind of gets you going, and zero in on that and do as much of that as you can. And then hopefully that fills the tank for your other stuff. And I think that recipe is going to be different for everybody, and that's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
It is. It is.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Cups, always a pleasure. I think maybe next time we'll meet at Chase's Pancake Corral or one more time at Chase's.
I am always open for that. I asked you the question kind of the, you know, time and place of where and how you're spending it. Mine is in and around two things. One is family, obviously, and two is connections and where those connections are. And like you said, being part of a team or being part of a community that gives you energy. So,
Yeah, for sure. And I think we sort of maybe lost sight a little bit of that, of how much energy you can get off of others and their interactions with you. And you know, it's a big part of life. We're humans at the end of the day, we're just carbon based life forms, you know, struggling through the universal void.
All right. Thank you again.
All right, sir.
Have a great afternoon. Take care.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
You bet.
551, continue monitoring vitals and transport
media. Thanks for joining us today on the Edgecelsior Show. Please subscribe and stay tuned for more, and check us out online about how you can scale your edge compute business.